Welcome, citizens of the People's Show. We come to you live on Sportsnet 650 and at your listening pleasure on your favorite podcatcher. Subscribe, leave a review. We do appreciate it for your downloads, for your ears. It does go a long way for our future approval ratings. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda interact with us with the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. You can also connect on Twitter at Dan Riccio underscore at Satyar Shah and at Randeep Janda. Coming up on the show today, Don Taylor after 4 o'clock, Ryan Kessler at 5 o'clock today, and we'll bring you the Canucks and Oilers puck drop at 7 here at Sportsnet 650 in the pregame starting up at 5 o'clock. It has been a difficult weekend around the Canucks, and the allegations of sexual misconduct need to be taken seriously. The accused is entitled to the presumption of innocence under the Canadian justice system. We know that. This makes for a very delicate conversation. I hope anyone talking about this proceeds with care and respect. The investigation is underway, and we will await for more news to come as it happens. Now, I will say this about the whole situation, and as the weekend played out, this definitely felt, and I've felt this for a while, that this organization has needed and needs a president of hockey ops. It didn't feel right having Travis Green to be the one to answer the first questions from media about the situation, even if the answer was going to be mostly the same from whomever it came from.
Dan, it's the perception of the absence of leadership in the situation, right? That's what it kind of comes down to. And as far as this entire conversation goes, it was very well stated off the top, Dan. And of course, with respect to survivors, when they hear this discussion, it can be very difficult to hear. So we're going to be respectful for that. And we understand it's not going to always be easy. From the organization standpoint, that's what people are pointing towards. I know Patrick Johnson wrote an article, which was very well written, on the province about the situation in the absence of somebody else from the organization. And having, you know, looked into the situation a little bit here, I can understand perception-wise why people feel that way. From the organization standpoint, I know they feel like the statement that they acted swiftly, that they started right away by removing Jake Virtanen from the team, issuing a statement, and taking this very seriously. But I can understand from a perception standpoint, Randeep, why Travis talking first has people asking a lot of questions.
And the reason that would be sad is that, you know, we've been asking this question probably a few months before. Obviously, this is a different situation, much more serious than any sport ever will be. But when we talk about, you know, speaking for the organization, we talk about, you know, that singular vision, that singular voice, that leadership, especially in some situation like this, you know, the head coach that doesn't even have a contract beyond essentially a month from now, it was an odd choice. And Dan, your point about, you know, the president of hockey ops, yeah, I'm totally with you. I was there a few months ago as well, is who's going to provide that voice? Who's going to be that singular vision slash voice that speaks for the organization when it's a hockey decision, when it's a business decision, when there's a serious matter at hand? And that question is still out there for me, because I think, you know, hockey ops leadership is one thing, working behind the scenes and being, for another word, hockey men, there's a role and a place for that, sure. But in today's day and age, running an organization is more than that. Running an organization means you're a community member. Running an organization means you also have a business front. There's many layers to it, is my point. And I feel as though, you know, going back even a number of months ago, that I think that's where this organization is lacking right now. And that's why you don't have that leadership, you know, that voice coming out here, because I think that position is not occupied yet. It doesn't exist for the Canucks since Trevor Linden left. But yeah, there's a, I don't know if it's a communication issue, but look back to the JT Miller, you know, speaking out in the media, and eventually that initiated change. That extended the Canucks coming back to play hockey after their COVID outbreak. I'm still kind of perplexed how nobody within the organization made that public. And then eventually that was something that, you know, the league and I guess in some ways the team also took notice of as well. So to me, communication seems to be a bit of an issue here, guys.
Well, I think one thing that I look at, and it's, you know, you have certain people in your organization that are going to be focusing on the hockey side of things. And yes, the Canucks do have people that focus on the business side and those sorts of things, of course. But, you know, okay, Jim Benning is off in Texas. He's at the U18 Worlds. He's focused. He's looking for how to improve this team down the line, those sorts of things. He's doing his job as a general manager. Travis Green is trying to get this team on the ice and get ready for the Maple Leafs on Saturday. When JT Miller comes out and talks, you know, he's trying to be a good teammate, but why does that fall on his shoulders? You know, they should be focused on the game, on the ice, getting ready to play, and those sorts of things. And there's just been, because there has been a lot of things happen to this team this year in a lot of different ways and a lot of different situations that have popped up, it's made it even more apparent that there is that absence of a voice. You know, when we think of a hockey team on the ice, you know, the captain is the guy that's in front of the camera after the game every single night, win or lose, bad loss, big loss, whatever it may be. And that's a responsibility of the captain. I feel like the Canucks kind of miss that from a front office perspective in just having that person be available for when situations come that warrant it to. And that's happened on more than one occasion over these last few months with this season.
I do think when it comes to this situation in particular, right, like it's a very sticky situation. It's something that happened right away. And I do think there is a level of, okay, there are a lot of things we can point to over the last little while, right? And say, hey, this was a situation, that was a situation, we don't like this hockey decision, and that. Now, when it comes to this particular situation, they may have handled everything completely right. And when it comes to Travis Green, hey, he's going to have to face the media for his game day availability anyways. And they were going to ask, he was going to be asked about it regardless. So I understand that no matter what, he would have had to talk to the media. He would have had to been asked some of the questions, and he would have referred to the statement like he did. That was always going to happen to some degree, right? Now, the question here is, would some pressure have been taken off of Travis had somebody else come out and said something first? Hey, that's a hypothetical none of us really know about, but one thing I think is absolutely true is that it's been a very tough year for this entire organization top to bottom. And the other thing that's true is, because of the economic realities, there is a lot less people working in this organization through various levels. When that happens, you've seen this happen throughout work in so many different areas, right? Whether it's, you know, in broadcasting, everyday work, there are less people working in many cases, and there's more on everybody else's plate. So, yeah, there's a situation where a lot of people have a lot on their plate, and it's been a very trying season, and it's been one big thing after another they have to deal with, and it hasn't gone smoothly. And if you had more hands on deck, potentially, you had somebody else to help out, it would have allowed you to navigate each situation one after another a lot easier. Because when you're asking a lot from a group of individuals, whether you think they're good or not at their job, well, you're not putting them in a position to really succeed individually. Now, when it comes to this particular situation, again, they may have handled everything right, but the absence of it in the past and the perception is what carries the day more than anything else. And I think if you really want to get the most out of people in this front office, get the most out of people in this organization, having more people to help lessen the load for them and having more qualified people in bigger roles and helping out in that aspect, well, that's going to make your life a lot easier. It's going to make you navigate these situations a lot easier. Now the Jake situation is a lot different. It's a lot much more intense. The stakes are much higher. There's a lot of liability involved. There's a lot here that maybe they did handle everything right. But when you look at the big picture of everything that's happened this season, you look at the changes that happened and how everything economically has to make a lot more sense now than ever before, well, there are more pressures on each and every individual in this organization. And when big things happen, you have a lot less people working on things. Well, it makes it a lot harder to navigate.
And Sat, your point there about, you know, if this was an isolated incident and none of that stuff had happened previously, then it's a valid point of saying, okay, maybe bringing it up is unfair, but there is that history. There is that element of, you know, there have been issues in the past in regards to communication. And is that, you know, that absence of leadership the problem? It seems like the process is off in some way or form. I think leadership in general is something that, you know, we've been talking about and kind of isolating and zeroing in on over the last year. I know some people have been doing that even more so. So this is something that I think at some point the organization will have to look at it and say, okay, how do we bulk it up? How do we support, to your point, put positions, people in positions to succeed, and the organization to succeed as well? Because right now what's going on is there's a lot of noise around this organization. And I understand it. This most recent incident, like we've talked about, super sensitive. It's much bigger than sports. And I don't really want to, mention this one in isolation. But I think when we talk about those previouses, going back a year, going back 2 years, that's where you can start saying, okay, at some point, maybe it's post-pandemic, maybe when the money starts flowing again, you got to bulk up the organization and really put people in a position to succeed, because as of right now, there do seem to be some gaps.
650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. That's how you get in touch with the show. The smart alternative, visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Also 604-280-0650 to get in on the phone lines. It's... Look, so much about what's going on right now and what has happened over the course of this season to the Canucks as well is the reputation is coming into question, of the organization as a whole. A lot of different incidents, a lot of different things that have happened, even going back to the on-ice stuff and regarding the off-season and the miscommunications there, and we ran out of time, and all these different things coming together. And that's, it just, you hear it a lot around the league, and it's not even, it's not like anybody I've talked to is just, coming out and saying, man, that team's a mess. It's more like, what's going on with the Canucks? And that's when you start thinking about that, it should make you want to wonder how has this happened and where do we go from here? Because you have to repair that in some aspects, and it will eventually come back to what happens on the ice with this team and your ability to attract free agents. Those different types of things are always going to be difficult for a lot of Canadian cities to attract free agents. But you add in that, there seems to be something amiss with your franchise, and that's going to really make it even more difficult. And that's one thing that I know this is what happened over the weekend with Jake and the allegations, an isolated incident. But in the larger context, I feel like that question has been posed to me a lot more this season than it was last year for the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, and the question is going to really come down to, and I see people texting in, 650, 650. This one, guys, they wouldn't pay Trampkin. What makes you think they're going to spend money on a president? I believe that's Rager who texted that in. And hey, and that's a fantastic point. Like, how willing are you to invest in those sort of things? When do you feel like the economics of the game will allow you to reinvest more seriously in things with this organization? When is that going to happen? Is it going to be next season? Or the reality is, for next season, at least here in Canada, when the fall comes around, guys, the stadiums are not going to be full. They're not. I don't see a situation where Canada is going to grant full stadiums, considering the way the vaccine rollout's going and kids under 16 still can't get and all those other things going on. I'm not sure that from a government level, provincial or federal, there will be arenas in Canada are going to be allowed to be full right away next season. Now, in the U.S., well, they're on a different time trajectory right now, right? I mean, they might be full. I mean, Texas has it full already, so you might even see it full by the time fall comes around in every single state, potentially. So the revenue streams for American teams is a lot different. Here in Canada, does that impact things when it comes to their decision-making now? They signed Pearson. They signed Thatcher Demko. We all know with Travis Green, that hasn't gotten done yet. And if you're not sure what the economics are going to be next season, are we going to see the team really invest behind the scenes this offseason?
So that's a valid point. That's a valid suggestion on the financials. But I think the reality is, and I know you understand this, I know most of our listeners do, but if you're in the game of owning a sports franchise, at some point, especially at this important juncture for the Vancouver Canucks, they got to spend some money. There is a fine line between having very good young players and being successful and being a dumpster fire. A dumpster fire is the Buffalo Sabres. Nobody wants to turn into that organization that has a hard time investing in anything. And I get the pandemic is a problem, But remember when Bob Nicholson, and it's ironic how the Oilers are in town right now. Remember when he took the job and he famously said, there's something in the water in Edmonton. There's something wrong in the water in Edmonton, right? He got it filtered with Ken Holland. He brought him in and he said, we're going to figure this out. We're going to nip it in the bud. And that's it. That's done. It's exactly what happened in Edmonton. They made the right moves. They brought in a culture that was different. They brought in a leader. So I get the financial case, but the Canucks have Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, but that does not guarantee you success. Having the right leadership, having the moves after those young guys is what gets you the right, you know, that next level of success. So this is an important juncture. I understand it coincides with a pandemic, but at some point, if you're a billionaire in the business of constructing a team and making it successful, timing matters. And that's why there might not be that much money for a president of hockey ops, but this ownership group, or sorry, this team, this organization requires some leadership right now, especially in constructing this team. So I get the finances, but this is a very important offseason coming up for the Canucks.
And it comes up from top down. To me, it's top down as well, right? Like it starts at the very top of your organization when you talk about leadership.
It does. And Trucker James coming in, I completely agree. Ownership has to either fill the void and hire a president of hockey ops, or if he wants to control everything himself, then he's got to get out in front of the mic and take care of sending the message to the public via the media. That comes in from Trucker James at 650-650. It does. And things filter down all the time. You see it across every sports league, and you can't hide from it. And right now, yes, the Canucks are in a... It's been a difficult year. There's a lot going on. You have a lot of reasons for why some things have happened, why you've scaled back on spending. And I feel like every business has that right in the current landscape. But at the same time, you know, life goes on in the NHL. You know, what if, as Patrick Johnston posed in the province this weekend, what if Elias Pettersson is the subject of an offer sheet and he gets 11-7 somewhere across the NHL? How are the Canucks going to be able to deal with something like that? You know, eventually it does come back to the competitiveness of it all. And yes, there are parts of this team right now that are in doubt. You know, your coaching situation, what's happening with that? Everything about right now and how this has been handled on the ice, off the ice over the last year, yeah, you have a lot of question marks. And I feel a lot of fans have that right now. And quite frankly, I don't think they're wrong to have those questions about the direction of this team at this moment.
Well, things did change, right? Like, things did change this offseason. And I see this text coming in, 650, 650, unsigned. I think it's unfair to loop everything into one with the team, player acquisition or trades or lack thereof is very fair. But to include COVID or include the Jake situation, I think is unfair. When you guys mention all of this is happening for the last few years, I also recall that on the radio and in the general public, the fan base has everyone excited after the bubble last year. So I don't think that's fully fair. I don't think we're saying that everything is bad year after year. If anything, I think I was a lot more bullish on the direction of this team about a year ago, even that offseason that people did not like a lot of the moves. I credited them for being bold, for going out and making moves, and trying to be a playoff team. You have to choose a direction now. You can't rebuild for 5 or 6 years, and eventually you got to make a couple moves and try to get better and put your young players like Pettersson and Hughes in a position to have success early in their careers. So I was for that. Then things changed this offseason. So when we talk about things changing, I do think sometimes when there isn't a lot of trust guys, right, when there is a lack of belief and faith that they are going to do the right thing and things happen, there's a level of opportunistic criticism on certain things, and perhaps the COVID thing and perhaps the situation now, there might be a level to that, and I don't think it's necessarily fair to be overly critical on those situations right away, because hey, to some degree it's out of your control, right, and things happen sometimes and you're trying to deal with it in real life, and these are real hard life situations. So I do have some sympathy for those situations and how to navigate them, and it's not so simple. But overall, when you look at how things changed this offseason, when money became a bigger issue, when you were so bold and ambitious to build your team and all of a sudden that changes, well, yeah, it does question what the direction is overall. When is that financial interest going to change? And when will that desire increase again? Now, we can sit here and say an owner is well within his rights to limit spending in a pandemic and the economic realities. You cut the checks, you choose how much you're willing to spend or not. But it also speaks to your ambition. at what point is that ambition going to come back to this organization? Because right now, it's not there from the very top.
Well, Sat, you know, the owner is able to make that decision, but the consumer is also able to make a decision on how they feel about it, right? And based on this city and based on where a lot of the fans, a lot of the texts that we get, people are confused by that two-year window again. When we heard it, we kind of raised our eyebrows as well, saying, okay, where did that come from when Jim Benning mentioned it a couple of months back? So, hey, the owner of any sports franchise, including the Vancouver Canucks, can make their own decision because, yes, they fund it, but the consumer can be skeptical, and the consumers can say, wow, why did you make that trade for a Tyler Toffoli then? Why did you make those moves, you know, very recently? Because if the consumer is confused, yeah, that doesn't really instill confidence. And that's the issue here. I think most people, you know, I was a part of, hey, team, get playoff experience. Like, that's going to be valuable for your young kids because then you're able to take that next step. Well, the next step we're hearing is in potentially 2 to 3 years. That obviously changes the dynamic a little bit and makes you question last year's move and the years, you know, the offseason before that moves as well, because they were moves to go not maybe all in, but definitely closer to all in than previous years.
Lots coming in. A lot of reaction on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jack, the Canucks as a whole have no identity. Management is a joke. That coming in at the Dunbar Lumber text line. Another one saying an 11-by-7 for Pettersson would entitle the Canucks with 4 first-round picks. You might not find another Elias Pettersson with those 4 first-round picks. That's always the caveat of it all.
Yeah, the one thing I will say about the whole offer sheet possibility, I don't think you should be looking at the 11x7. I think more in line with a Sebastian Aho type of offer sheet. And if some team looks at Vancouver and says, well, they haven't been spending a lot of money. We can see what they've done with their deals. And hey, you don't need to be reporting on this. Just look at the contracts, the way they've been structured, and look at the things that have happened. This is things that anybody can look up and put two and two together here. So based on all those sort of things, what type of appetite would there be for a big signing bonus? So if a team comes up with a Sebastian Aho type of offer sheet where it's a first-round pick or 2 firsts and a second or whatever it is, not 4 first-round picks, the thing that they're going to try to do, if somebody does, they look at it financially and say, well, how willing are they to pay a big signing bonus of like $8 million or $9 million or something the first year or the second year? Those types of things. Do you front-load the deal and make them think that way? That's, I think, what somebody would try to do with an offer sheet. I don't see somebody doing an 11x7 type of deal. And that should be easy to match unless, well, it's a bit different.
It is the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Jain. To keep your reaction coming in, 650-650. Also on the phone line, 604-280-0650. We'll get into Travis Green and the contract talks, whether there have been any or not, in the next segment. Also, want to get into the NFL draft as well as get you ready for the Canucks and Oilers. But I almost feel like... Nikita Triamkin, the story that would never end. We could make a Canucks version of the never-ending story with Nikita Triamkin around it. So we've got to fill in the blank for today around that and try to lighten it up, have some fun with the whole situation, how wild and crazy it got through the years. Will he come back? Won't he come back? Why is Jim Benning bringing him up? The Nikita Triamkin saga lasted longer than blank. Get your answers in, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line, and also at Sportsnet 650 on Twitter. The graphic is up and available now for you to reply to as well. Randy, why don't you kick this off?
All right, I got one here. The Triamkin saga lasted longer than Willie Desjardins' NHL coaching career.
It's a real good game.
It's real good.
If you actually compare the time of Willie coaching in the NHL versus Nikita Triamkin leaving Vancouver, Nikita actually, that saga was longer than Willie's coaching career, including LA. It wasn't very long, boys.
Is that what opposing coaches say about the Canucks? Now, that's a real good team over there. It's a
real good team over there. Strong, very strong.
I remember when the Edmonton Oilers came to town and Willie Desjardins was coaching, and the Oilers were not good. They were trash. And Willie's like, they're a real good team over there. Like, come on, man. Come on. Don't give us that. No, they're not.
It's a real good team over there, guys. Dino in Richmond lasted longer than Password 2.0.
Oof.
Actually, I think he called it ass-word. Okay.
Okay. Not quite, but
not
I get
fan.
It.
Yeah, he's not a fan of Password 2.0.
Yeah. That is Joey in Richmond, by the way. That's Dino Cicciarelli in Richmond.
Ah, okay.
On Twitter, at Joe Lynn, Ross and Rachel.
That's actually a really long time.
That was pretty long, actually.
Which is true. I mean, this Nikita Triamkin saga. I've been here for 3 years. It's been the same conversation around Nikita Triamkin. Have some fun with it. The Triamkin saga lasted longer than blank. We'll read some of your responses through the course of the show today. Coming up, Travis Green, the NFL draft, lots in the 3:30 segment of the show. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. The People Show on Sportsnet 650.
Good. They were good.
Well, the people are certainly buying in on the Nikita Triamkin saga, fill in the blank.
Are they ever?
I wish I could read this one from Bo and Burnaby.
I think we can. Maybe. I think we can, Dan.
Okay, well, if you adjust it.
Yeah, let me think about how we're going to do that. Maybe we should get into some other ones first.
Randeep, you said you can do it, so you shall accept this challenge and find a way to adjust this text message.
Yeah, Randeep, it's in your hands now.
At some point,
Bix,
I will. Let me.
Bix's like, I think you can read it. Then it's like eight ellipses. And I'm like, wait, that doesn't sound very reassuring.
At some point, I will. At some point. Let me reword this.
Yeah. The Nikita Triamkin saga lasted longer than blank. Answer it 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Also at Sportsnet 650 on Twitter. That's where Discount Dracula comes in with the news of the day. Bill Gates' marriage. I don't. That was 27 years, okay?
That's not bad.
Bill and Melinda, you know.
But it does feel like it.
It did feel like 27 years with Nikita Triamkin. I'm not going to lie.
It feels like these airwaves in this city have been having Todd Diamond on the air for 27 years at times.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I mean, the Triamkin thing is just, man. It lasted longer than Zack Snyder's Justice League. That's like an eight-hour movie.
Oh, that's the nine-hour one that me and Randeep had no idea about until like a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I thought it was a hot dog.
Randy's
thought it was
like
a special
Schneider's?
Hot dog.
Snyder's hot dog special cut? Extra long? What?
Are we talking about Bo's text again or what? No, okay, never mind.
I sent in our group chat, I sent in a word you can use instead of that word, and I think it should be okay if you do that.
That's one way of doing it. You know what? I'm going to say it. Whenever we come with these submissions, I'll do it. Not right now, though, when we read them out. I'll say it. I don't care.
Silver and Black Canuck, the Triamkin saga lasted longer than Fergie's national anthem performance at the NBA All-Star game.
Yeah.
That was one of the worst things. Worst recent national anthem, for sure.
Yeah.
But the Triamkin thing, we don't want to get into it too much because it is what it is. Essentially, we kind of figured out what Nikita Triamkin's play was through all these years. He never wanted to come back.
No, exactly. I mean, okay, one thing is very clear here to me is that he was using the Canucks as leverage for his contract in the KHL. That's what it looks like to me, right? Like, hey, does that mean Jim Benning had a desire to sign him? It seems like he did. He himself said, you know, to the province over the weekend that he had desire and he was talking to the agent, was trying to get something done. So obviously Jim had a desire to do so. But as far as Nikita Triamkin's desire, reading between the lines and looking into this a bit over the past couple of days, guys, I really think it was Nikita Triamkin's side that was using the Canucks as leverage to get a good contract out of the KHL. Because I don't think it really seemed like that guy had a real desire to come to Vancouver. Now, I think the Canucks dodged a bullet. Not a bad bullet, because it was going to likely be a one-year deal anyways. You get off the books, and it's not a big deal. But I don't think Tramkin's an answer. And I'm actually glad Tramkin decided to stay in Russia instead of the Canucks signing him, because I think that money could have been spent better on other players. Like, I look at a guy like Luke Shen that can do everything you want Nikita Tramkin to do next season, and he's going to cost probably half of what Nikita Tramkin would have cost.
And at least players like that, whether they're veteran players that have played in the NHL, they would provide some flexibility. You might be able to shop them. You might be able to throw them on waivers, send them down. With Nikita Triamkin, you wouldn't have any any flexibility because there are conditions on which he wanted to sign that deal if he was going to indeed come to Vancouver. So your point about, you know, them using the Canucks as leverage, absolutely. They use this market as leverage. They use the media as leverage as well. It was a smart play from Todd Diamond, who I got to remind you, is a pretty successful agent, right? He's got Sasha Barkov, he's got Provorov, Sergachev, like...
But there's, yeah,
he played this well. I got to say, he played it well.
You can look at it that way. But here's the thing: like, Tramkin has Russian agents, right? So I don't think Todd Diamond is getting a dime out of the contract. Now, I don't know this for sure, right? But he has Russian agents that I'm not sure how closely they work with Todd Diamond. It seems to me, you know, doing some research on this, that the Russian agents came to a deal and Tramkin signed it. Now that Todd Diamond knew or didn't know, I'm not going to speak for him. I can't sit here and do that, right? I don't know exactly what's going on. But he does have Russian agents here as well, right? So I don't know how much of this was, you know, Todd Diamond trying to use the Canucks as leverage. But I totally believe that Tramkin himself probably used the Canucks, or his Russian agents to some degree, was using the Canucks' interest as leverage in negotiations. Now, whether Todd Diamond was part of that or not, I can't speak for him, I can't say, but that would be my guess on things.
Joey in Richmond, fun fact, Nikita Tryamkin was actually drafted one round later in the same draft as Pavel Bure. it's Joey in Richmond, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now, the other, you know, contract stalemate that has been going on around the Vancouver Canucks is with the coach. And
the one that matters, Rich. The one that actually matters.
The one that actually matters. Travis Green, still without contract. John Shannon reported last week that there may have been an offer, as we had talked about here on the show last week as well. You know, there's been a few offers to Travis Green, but recent ones, there's definitely some question marks of that, Sat.
Yeah. Now, I don't think anybody really has a clear handle on what parameters were fully discussed, what the numbers were, but I totally believe this whole notion of an offer, a firm offer, and all that sort of stuff was definitely overstated. It was definitely overstated. I don't think there was one, and we saw the reporting today from Elliot Friedman. I don't really think there was a hard, firm offer on the table, really, or that they've really made a lot of headway here. Just in terms of the parameters that have been discussed, it's very clear there's a sizable gap between these two sides. And I'm not sure whatever was relayed this week by Jim, and we heard the reports by John Shannon and others that the Canucks were readying an offer this week, whether that was an offer or discussions, it does not seem that like it really closed the gap at all. So regardless of whether it was a real offer or not, guys, we are nowhere closer to Travis Green signing an extension today than we were before these rumors started coming out earlier this week, which I'm not dismissing that these things weren't being discussed behind the scenes. Just don't assume it was actually strong, hard, firm offers on paper that created headway in negotiations. I would say that would be overstating things.
It is the people's show. And you know, we heard on 31 Thoughts today what's going on with Rod Brind'Amour, and that's another one of the big-time free agents. And essentially, Farijasan, Brind'Amour is, you know, he's kind of figured some things out, but he also wants to get his staff taken care of as well. Now, Brind'Amour has a lot of bargaining power. And look, we've all kind of talked about what we feel with Travis through the course of the show and through the season and through his years here. And you know, I certainly think pretty highly of the job that Travis Green has done. Now, I also know at the same time that Travis doesn't really have the bargaining power that a Rod Brind'Amour would, whose team is currently one of the best in the league and will be fighting for the Stanley Cup this year. And the Canucks are set to be a lottery team. That's not necessarily on Travis Green, given what's gone on with the roster and what he's had to work with this year. But it's just obvious that Rod Brind'Amour has probably the best bargaining position of any coach who is without contract going into this summer. Now, when it comes to Travis, and we get this text in or tweet in, you know, what's the argument against Travis here? This is from Matt on Twitter. Would you guys mind offering perspective on why Travis wouldn't warrant another contract?
Well, I think based at this juncture, a couple of things, right? Obviously, finances is something that, you know, Sats talked a lot about as well in the past of what the limitations of the organization are. But if you're saying from a coaching perspective, you know, why Travis Green wouldn't work, listen, he's not a perfect coach. There is no perfect coach out there. It doesn't exist. But based on the available options within the price, within the price range that the Canucks seem to be in, I don't think there's an alternative. If Travis Green at this point in time is still keen on coming back to Vancouver, because the longer this goes, I genuinely start to wonder if that's actually a thing. If this coach at some point in time, it's like anybody, right? In any profession, you want to be valued by your employer, but there is a best before date. At some point, you cross a line and say, all right, if this isn't moving anywhere, I got to start considering other options. To me, within that price range, within the coaches available that are not named Gerard Gallant, that are not named, you know, Bruce Boudreau, who are going to be more expensive, Travis Green is the option. So why it wouldn't be happening, I think it simply comes back to your point, Sat. The finances, yet again, are a major issue with this team.
That's what it comes down to more than anything else. You know, I think the best case to not bring Travis back would be that, yeah, you want an upgrade, that there is a number of coaches with a lot of pedigree, right, that are available right now, and you feel like those guys could put your team in a better position to have success. That could be a rational argument somebody can make, right? Absolutely. That's absolutely a rational argument. Hey, I like Travis, but hey, I can't sit here and say it's a bad decision to bring in somebody else after his contract runs out that has pedigree, is a good coach, and could take this team to the next level. I mean, you can make that argument. But if you're not willing to go out and get those guys, then, yeah, it comes down to what are you willing to do. And based on those options, you know, if it's not a clear upgrade, yeah, I would you rather bring Travis back than not have a clear upgrade, you know, ready to go after this season. But I think more than anything, too, guys, you know, looking at this team and how things have gone, whether it comes down to Travis or the organization, there's been a lot that's happened this year, right? Now, a lot of this stuff is out of their control. Like the COVID situation, all the other things that happened, it's a pandemic. It's a really tough season, and it's been a season from hell in so many different ways. How much of that weight had some people saying, you know what, I've had enough. Or you know what, I don't know if we're going to make this work anymore. We don't know that yet. We're going to find that out in a few weeks though, right? Perhaps that comes into play, whether that's from the organization's end or maybe that is from an individual's end, like a coach, for instance, who's like, you know what, I think with everything that's happened, it's better for a clean slate and to go somewhere else. Like that could also be at play with a number of people in this organization after the season based on how things have gone. I mean, that would not surprise me.
Chris and Duncan, how do we know that Travis hasn't declined all the offers thus far and wanting to wait? Would it make sense why offers are not being made? That's from Chris. From where I understand it is there have been offers, but they haven't been what Travis where Travis values himself at to this point from the Vancouver Canucks. And that's a bigger conversation, but as Sat just mentioned as well, it has come down to the finances of it all with Travis. And now we are, yeah, less than a month away from his contract, which is supposed to end on June 1st. Canucks and Oilers coming up tonight, 7 o'clock puck drop here on Sportsnet 650. Now, I do want to get to the NFL draft. We're not going to have a ton of time to talk about it with the game coming up here on the show, and we've got the pregame starting up at 5 o'clock. The NFL draft. Sat, Bic. Mm-hmm. Who are the big winners? Please don't tell me Randeep's Miami Dolphins.
I'm not on the Miami Dolphins trade. I'm definitely on the Chicago Bears side of things because they got Justin Fields. I think that's such a big win for them, and I like that the 49ers got Trey Lance. I'm not sure about the rest of their drafts, but those two for sure. And I can't believe I'm saying this, guys, but the New York Jets, outside of – I'm not sold on Zach Wilson – but they made three picks after Zach Wilson that I loved for value.
So Elijah Moore, I really like as a wide receiver. They got him early in the second round. The one thing I didn't like about the Jets is the trade up in the first round.
Sure, yes. Because I'm with you on that.
They got somebody that they could have gotten at their original spot. I think it was 24. And there's a lot of offensive line talent. Did they really need to trade up to get that one player? May that player have dropped to them at 24 if they don't make that trade up? I think all those things are possible, but there would have been, you know, Christian Darrisaw, you know, he fell to the Vikings anyways after they traded down. They still got the guy that they wanted, regardless of their trade down from 14. So that's the one thing I didn't like about the Jets draft.
The one thing I will say, though, there was a lot of buzz that Vera Tucker was going to go high and that, you know, teams were really liking him as one of the top guards in the draft. So I do think there was some of that stuff there. But I really like them grabbing Michael Carter as well. So if you grab your quarterback, whether you like him or not, but give him weapons and protection right away. The next guy they draft is an offensive guard. The next guy to draft is a really good wide receiver. They got good value at where they got him. And then they picked Michael Carter, who in North Carolina, alongside Javonte Williams, I loved the way he played. I liked the value they got there. So they got their top guy a couple weapons and some protection. And from a philosophical standpoint, yeah, I mean, I love the bet on the quarterback, but I like how you helped him out right away in that draft.
Got to give props to the Miami Dolphins, man. They did pick up
there we go.
Coquitlam boy.
Thank you.
Javon Holland, man.
What? That's only because he's from Coquitlam. That's the only reason you're saying it.
100%. 100%. But they did it. That's what matters.
Exactly. It's like kind of like the Cam Wake thing, right? He played here in BC, and people all of a sudden fell in love with the Dolphins for 10 minutes because Cam Wake was on the team. And same here with the Coquitlam love. I'm with you, Bic.
Now, don't necessarily love Jalen Waddle and Jalen Phillips where they picked them, but look, they got the Coquitlam pick right. That's all that matters.
Well, and I will say this. Maybe my favorite pick they made was Liam Eichenberg in the second round. Like, they got an offensive tackle who's decent in the second round. That was some value there, even though I didn't love where they took Waddle and Phillips.
Okay, this is actually – it's going to hurt me to say this, but the Patriots did decent work, guys. They didn't move up in that first round to get Mac Jones, and even later on in that draft, right, they got – Christian Barmore in the second round. They got, you know, another defensive player and defensive end and Ronnie Perkins as well. But, like, just making moves and not overspending in that first round, especially to get Mac Jones, and just getting quality players later on in the draft, especially in the second and third round. Like, Bill Belichick, I know he's been criticized for missing in that first round, but it feels like they did some decent work. Maybe not the winner like the Chicago Bears, or maybe not, you know, like the Jets in terms of the players that they got, but they still did some decent work as well, I thought.
I feel like Randeep is just, like, scared of the Patriots. Like, you're still in that mindset that whatever the Patriots do is going to work.
You can give a team love for making some good picks. I don't think they're going to compete for the division. Come on.
I don't disagree with Randeep, though. Like, getting Mac Jones, getting Barmore, maybe the top defensive tackle, you know, in the second round. Ronnie Perkins has some upside. Ramondre Stevenson, running back from Oklahoma. It's, like, Bick's favorite running back in this draft, so I know he's happy about it.
Love it. Love it. Just get me professional running backs. That's all that matters. Forget, like, the guys that run in, like, the 4.3s, man. Just get me the guys that know how to read the offensive line blocks.
Yeah, just the guys that can find the hole. I kind of like the Detroit Lions draft. Is that weird? That's not, like, in vogue to say or anything. But, you know, Dan Campbell got a bunch of guys that can break kneecaps, and that's what he wanted.
It's bite kneecaps, first of all, not break them. You gotta bite them.
Sorry.
Man, you gotta season them and, you know, really marinate them, and then you gotta bite into them. But yeah, he did.
He had a solid draft. And I didn't want to make this about the Cleveland Browns, but I feel really good about the Cleveland Browns.
Of course you do, Seth.
No, but consensus wise, I mean, they did fantastic. They got two first round caliber players in Greg Newsome, and they traded up to get Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa in the second round as well. And, you know, they got some value. They took some long shot bets as the draft went on, but those two guys to me were clear W's. And I got to give the Eagles some credit as well here. I thought Devontae Smith, where they got him, was fantastic.
Yep.
And Landon Dickerson, he's a decent guard. They got him. And Kenneth Gainwell, maybe the best value running back pick in this year's draft.
I think one
Boys
of the. Yeah, go ahead, Randy.
I was going to say, I feel like the Detroit Lions are building a really rough and tumble team, or they're going to be supplying the Detroit area with a bunch of bouncers for nightclubs for the next decade. Like, they're going to be one or the other. I'm not sure which one it is.
Now, I'll say this. Like, the team that comes away from the draft at looking terribly, I don't really dislike any of their picks. I just hate that they passed up on Justin Fields when they've got Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater as their quarterback. Now, if they end up trading for Aaron Rodgers, sure. But, like, you know, the Denver Broncos passing up on Justin Fields at 9, we could be looking at this a year from now and being like, how in the hell did the Broncos decide passing on Justin Fields was a good idea?
That's so funny because that's the only real criticism you can have of their draft, right? It's that they didn't take Justin Fields and they might regret not taking a potential franchise quarterback. Because Patrick Surtain, I'm a big fan of him. I like that pick. Javonte Williams, the running back they got, I really like that pick as well. And Jamar Johnson, the safety they got in the fifth round, I thought that was a steal getting him in the fifth round. So it's funny because when it comes to three other picks, I thought they were really good picks and really good players. But how do you juxtapose that with the missing on the value potentially on a franchise quarterback?
It is the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. Jacob and Suri. Michael Vick can still run a 4.740, which means reach is barely slower than a former NFL player. Hashtag facts only. I don't disagree, Jacob. 4.940.
Debatable.
Love to see it.
I don't know if I can still run a 4.940. It's I put a few years on me on the old tires over the last couple of years, but I think I could still do it. We'll see. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Randeep Janda. Coming up, Don Taylor back in on the Vancouver Canucks. More of your texts and not saying just saying coming up at 4:40. It is the People's Show on Sportsnet 650.